Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and also every podcast catcher. All right, you probably guys can't hear me because I had a mask on. Now, this is the real fright. Happy Halloween, everybody. This is the Dark Mark Show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Nicole will be joining us. Everybody's favorite horror writer will be joining us in a few minutes. She's stuck in traffic. It's LA. That's the real horror. But yeah, I have two of my friends, two of my favorite people on the show. And we did this 2 years ago, pre-pandemic. And hopefully by doing this, we'll get rid of the pandemic.
Say but right, scamdemic. Yes.
And we did the Halloween show.
We did the Halloween show at the CIA. They're talking already. The person that said scamdemic is Carl Crew, the star of Blood Diner, The Secret Life of Jeffrey Dahmer, many, many other movies. And Gross Out, he wrote and directed. And the proprietor of the California Institute of Abnormal Arts, one of my favorite places to play. And there he is. Say hi, Carl. He's standing in front of the Elephant Man's bones.
Hey, happy Halloween. Yeah, what's up? Don't be scared.
And Carl, I remember a couple years ago, I had this gentleman perform on my show, and you were amazed that I knew him, first off, and then I got him to perform at your venue. And with good reason. He's a comedy legend. He's one of the comedy's dirtiest dozen. Yeah. He's been all over the place. He's been many, many, many movies. He used to open for Richard Pryor. He used to referee matches for Andy Kaufman. He's got story. He used to write, I think, for Famous Monsters magazine. He was on Unsolved Mysteries. The man's done everything, and he's just getting started. It's my friend Joey Gaynor. Hey, Joey.
Hey, how are you, Mark? How you doing, Carl? And hi, everybody legendary out there. Welcome,
the legendary Joey Gaynor,
to the Halloween program.
You are a legend, Joey. If there's a comedy Hall of Fame, you would be there.
Yes. Oh, if the checks were as big as my legend.
Yeah.
I know the check for the CIA show wasn't as big as your legend. I apologize.
Oh, it was beautiful. That, are you
we
kidding?
Had a great time.
I had to carry that with two guys to get
out. It was the first time you were there. We're going to talk about all this, but
it was a great show. It was fun.
I'm going to do this before we start the show, because I know when you guys get going, I'll barely get a word in edgewise. This is what I need to keep up with you two. Raise energy drink. I recommend everybody go to the link in the podcast catcher or on YouTube. Get a case of Raise energy drinks. We have a code for 15% off. This is the
such
best
deal.
Get this in stores. Better than Red Bull, better than Monster, better than Rockstar. This is South Beach flavor. Tastes like a pina colada. Not only is this the best tasting energy drink, zero carbs, zero calories, zero crash.
Zero sugar. Zero sugar?
Zero sugar, zero carbs.
I'm type 2 diabetic. I'm going over to the website.
Delicious. They've got all sorts of flavors. They have Baja Lime that tastes like Baja Blast. Once again, zero sugar. They have sour gummy worms, which is surprisingly good. You'll love it. So while we're waiting for Nicole, I got to say now, Carl, when we get with you guys, things just jump all over the place. But let's start with this. When you saw Joey Gaynor in the CIA, you were very excited. What did you know Joey Gaynor from before?
I knew Sandy Seashore. I wrote a script for her years ago. So I've always heard about everyone that performed at the Comedy Store. And actually, my old filmmaking business partner used to date her. And
that's Paul's sister. Pauly Shore's sister, Miss T. Shore's daughter, for people.
Yeah, the late Sandy Shore.
Yep. And she was a trip. Yes. I kind of stopped hanging around her after she started going out in UFOs flying over Hollywood.
Right.
Yeah. And I wrote a script for her called Dungaree Kids, which was about kids at a camp that have a UFO experience, oddly enough. And then all this stuff happened. But years later, I found out that she took my name off it, got Mickey Dolenz to write the screen, the music, and they spent a year casting it. And then Mitzi's lawyers came in and the whole place blew apart. Yeah, everyone walked. So anyway, but yeah, I've always heard of Joey Gaynor. And of course, you know, Andy Kaufman. I mean, wow. I mean, Joey Gaynor is legendary. Yeah. And you should be honored to have him back on the show.
Oh, I am honored to have Mark.
I'm honored to be here. Are you kidding? I'm honored that you guys honor me.
Had you seen him perform before you before the CIA? Had you seen him perform in the Comedy Store or other places?
I never have. I never have, only on TV.
Yeah.
And on the porno channel.
Hello,
darling.
Hi.
Nicole's on the show, by the way, if people on audio. Nicole, is that your Halloween costume?
It's a pre-Halloween costume. I got kitty ears.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So adorable.
Good to see you again, baby.
Good to see you.
Nice to meet you.
And you're meeting Joey Gaynor first time. We're just stroking his ego, talking about what a legendary comic he is. And he is. Joey.
Thank you. That's very nice.
Richard Pryor handpicked Joey to open for him every time he's at the Comedy Store. Is that correct?
Pretty much. Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah.
Now, why you? Why, of all the comics, there's so many great comics at the Comedy Store, especially at that time.
Well, I'll tell you what's funny. I was working the door there. I was a MC and doorman, me and Harris Pete and everything. And Mitzi called me up to be there a couple of nights a week to help out because it was so crowded and everything. And I said, sure, you know, that'd be great. I get to watch Richard, man, you know. And I was always afraid to talk to him because he was my idol. So finally, I got the guts up to like have a conversation, try to get a conversation. He was sitting on the belly room stairs, you know, at the end of the hall there.
Right.
And I have a poster that is from when he did, when Is It Something I Said, that album came out. Right. And he did 7 nights at the Schubert Theater. Right. And I went to 4 of the nights. This was in October of 75. I went to 4 of the nights, and every night was a little different, and I'd never seen anything like that. I'd been a fan of Richard Pryor my whole life, but I'd never seen him live, and he just blew me away. It was ridiculous. And I heard he played this place, the Comedy Store, so I started to hang out there in late 75, etc. Now it's 1983, and he's getting ready. He's working out to do his film. I think it was Here and Now.
By the way, the
one that shot in New Orleans is the one.
The poster that you had, it was anything like the album cover. The album cover was Something I Said.
Right, they're about to burn him at the stake. Yeah, that's exactly what the poster.
Surrounded by Ku Klux Klan members.
Right, right, and guys in hoods and everything, like, you know, they're going to chant Gregorian chants, you know.
Right.
So I took the poster and I walked up to him and I said, Mr. Pryor, you know, I saw you at the Schubert. Would you sign this? And he took it and went, oh, motherfucker, how'd you get this? I said, well, I took it off the wall. Oh, why? And he's signing it. And I said to him, you know, out of nowhere, I blurted out, you know, I remember seeing you on Merv Griffin when I was a kid and Fat Jack Leonard came out and you came out and sat down. And it was right after the race riots. And Fat Jack Leonard was going, yeah, you know, Richard, I know you hang around with those Black Panther guys. You all get together. It's a bunch of guys. You know, I don't know what's going on. And it's kind of weird. And you turned to Jackie Leonard on national television and you went, hey, Jackie, man, let's get something straight. I'm not a fag, all right? So stop debating these things. This is the Black Panthers. It's black is beautiful, you know. And Jackie Leonard went, arr. I said, you shut him up. And I was imitating Jackie Leonard. And he hands me the poster and he goes, motherfucker, you remember? That's right. He used to say, cut that shit off. You remember? Oh, my God. What's your name? And we started the immediate friendship. And
that's so cool.
It was. It was like, you know, for me, it was making friends with Babe Ruth or Hank Aaron or you know, Wilt Chamberlain, any great Robert De Niro, whatever. And I learned a lot from him. He taught me a lot. I mean, it was just a great relationship. I wish I'd have been a little more aggressive in the relationship and maybe I'd have worked with him more, but I used to be mousy about that because I didn't want to bother people. Well, he wouldn't have you around if you were bothering him.
You didn't want to bother him, yet you went up to him with a poster of him being fake.
Right. I wound up working with him for 6-7 months, you know, so.
Now, Joey, I had you on the couple years ago.
Yes.
A couple times at the CIA, and I know that you are you're into ghosts, you're into weird stuff, you're into monsters, you're into old horror movies. What was your reaction when you walked in that place?
Which one? The
the California Institute of Abnormal Art.
Oh, my reaction was like, this is the circus that never leaves. I walked in there and I start looking around. And when I saw the clown, the mummified clown, I'm not a big clown fan, but when I saw that.
Are you scared of clowns?
Yeah, I don't want them in my face.
That's called coulrophobia.
Yeah, there's something about it. I mean, you know, do your thing, but don't get right in front of me. I just don't want that. Although I'd hang out with the members of KISS. That's no problem. Right. But not a clown blowing balloons. Not a bunch of
clowns. Come on.
Yeah.
The Insane Clown Posse, would you hang out with them?
Who?
The Insane Clown Posse?
No, because they wanted to be wrestlers, and they caused a lot of problems.
they shot a photo shoot here at my place, so I got to meet them one time. They were pretty nice to me.
No, I'm sure they were pretty good guys. I mean, they used to be on Howard Stern and stuff, and they were so crazy. And then they got involved in ECW wrestling, and they were getting thrown all around. And I just said, well, these guys are really crazy. I mean, the wrestling shows I did, which was at the old it was in Los Angeles. I got that. It began with an M. It's in the tip of my tongue. It was in Los Angeles. It was a
Johnny Legend stuff.
Yeah. The Johnny Legend stuff. I'm trying to remember the place we used to do it at. I mean, everybody, celebrities were coming down to see the wrestling show because we had bands on the show. And
I know I'm getting old because one of the Insane Clown Posse has to retire because his heart can't take it anymore.
Well, yeah, it's possible. I mean, those guys were crazy. I mean,
I'm sure they did plenty of weird drugs too. Nicole, what was your reaction when you stepped into the CIA for the first time when I played it a few months ago?
I thought it was really cool. Like, I thought it was a very unique, sort of Eastern, interesting place.
Now, Carl, tell us what's behind you, how you got that.
Oh, that is the skeletal, digital anamorphic scan of the original bones of Elephant Man.
Wow.
And it was recently donated to the club. My friend Captain Leather, he did all the costumes for Michael Jackson. He's been friends with Michael Jackson for years. And he actually tried to get the real bones for Michael from this family. They wouldn't sell it to him. But this is a digital scan done of the bones in London for the Broadway play with David Bowie. And
that's so cool.
I know the producer, he donated it, this and a case from the 1800s with the three original books for the Elephant Man and also the playbill from David Bowie. So yeah, very cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I'm really happy. I am my tour with the
girl. So this Joseph is a scan of Joseph Merrick, yes. Not David Bowie.
No, David Bowie comes on at the end. Yeah.
David Bowie did the play with no makeup.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know if a lot of people know that, but
that's bizarre. Yeah, that's called true acting.
From what I understand, I never got to see it. From what I understand,
I didn't
the
either.
Greatest
I didn't
performances. It was one of the greatest performances on stage.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. I read reviews. I actually got to meet David Bowie one time, and it blew my mind. I was downtown shooting a movie called Underachievers. We were downtown LA midnight. I mean, this is with Garrick Morris and Barbara Carrera and all these crazy people in it. Eddie Albert Jr.
I saw that you were in that movie, and I know I've seen the video box.
Yeah, we played two gay gangsters with the guy who co-starred with me in Blood Diner. We got in there. That's where I got my Taft Hartley from doing that film. But we're at this, it's midnight, we're on lunch, we're downtown LA. And he goes, yeah, come on around the corner. I'm going to introduce you to somebody. I go, okay, whatever. Walk around to this dive bar, closed. There's two people in it. And we walk in and there is, what's his name? He's from King Crimson.
The guitar player, Adrian Belew.
No, not Fripp.
Fripp?
No, the other guy. Not Robert Fripp. It was the other guy. But anyway,
Adrian Belew is who you're talking about.
Who?
Adrian Belew?
No.
He played with Bowie.
No. This is from King Crimson. But anyway, there he was. And, and that's David. I walked right up to both these guys. I've heard their music all my life. There was David on the stage, a little stage right there. And I've listened to him since I was 16, you know, I'm like, whoa, but I didn't fawn. I was like, thank you so much for your work. That's all I said. And he was very nice to me and very cool. It was very amazing. It was like a dream. I can't even believe that it actually happened, you know. But it was cool, man. It was cool. My friend was in my co-star from Blood Diner was in the video Days In, Days Out. And right. That's what they were shooting there the next day. Yeah. So okay. It was kind of cool. By the way, Joey, did you know we did Bigfoot wrestling at the club?
No.
Yes, they set up a giant wrestling ring in the whole main room, and all the superheroes and Bigfoot would wrestle.
See,
it was on Twitch, and they started here, but they went huge. They went into some other huge. It was hilarious, man. It was so good.
Your place reminds me of where we did the wrestling shows, which I just finally got the name in my head, Hollywood Moguls. It was Hollywood Moguls. It was on
I remember that.
Las Palmas. Not Las Palmas. It was like a block over from Las Palmas. And it had four rooms in it. And what we would do when we, because Eric Shaw, not Eric Shaw, that's a different wrestling promoter. That's a different guy. Eric Caden, who owned Hollywood Book and Poster, was partners with Johnny. And we would have one room would be all monster movie and movie memorabilia and stuff. Another room, somebody like Ian Whitcomb would come down and do a little concert in that room. And then the wrestling show would start. And then bands like Big Sandy and all these other bands, London After Midnight, would go on in between the wrestling matches. And one night it was so crazy. Well, it was amazing who would come down there to see this stuff. One night I'm up there doing L. Ron Farrakhan, you know, talking about unity through division. And if we could all, I'm doing my whole spiel. And I feel, it felt like a truck fell on me. And I feel a big arm over my shoulder. And I look and it's, God rest his soul, Chris Farley.
Oh, wow.
He got so into it. He grabbed the mic and God bless him. He'd had a few, you know. And he went, this man's doing God's work. And he with one arm as big as I was like 230. He was legendary. Crushing me with one arm. And
here's one of my favorites.
The guy just was. And then he went on Saturday Night Live a couple of weeks later and he did a wrestling bit. And I was like honored. I said, yeah, there you go.
So cool.
And
I love you for that. And
unfortunately, a couple of months after that, he passed away. And L. Ron Farrakhan, unfortunately, had a skinhead following.
Yeah, I wonder why.
And they would show up. The skinheads would show up and they'd buy anything I had to sell. I was at I'm going to finish with this. I was at the 99-cent store and I found these red, yellow, and green Mercedes-Benz hats. And they had Mercedes-Benz on them, the emblem. I found 20 of them. So I bought them for $1 a piece. I sold them for $20 each and autographed them as the official hat of L. Ron Farrakhan from Ad Minister L. Ron Farrakhan. And so I sold
like a Comic-Con before there were Comic-Cons.
Yeah, I sold all of them. They lined up to get them and I signed them and it was a great time. We had a great time at that. That place is gone now too. A lot of that's gone.
Yeah, that was what street was that on?
I think it was
did they build an apartment building over that?
I think they did. It's gone. It was either on.
That's actually where we shot some scenes of Blood Diner.
Because there was a lot of room. There was a big room where you could do wrestling.
Club Dread. We had Club Dread there.
Yeah.
And I remember they built a big apartment building over it. Yeah. That's so funny. But go ahead.
Chris Jericho, who's has AEW wrestling now, which is huge on TNT. He used to come down and hang out on Saturday night when he had nothing. You know, he wasn't wrestling, he'd come and hang out, which was great because to have a guy like that coming and hanging out at your show was just
very cool.
Pretty big time.
Yeah, it was really cool. And
now Carl, tell us some other unusual acts besides Bigfoot wrestling that you had at the CIA.
Well, first of all, let me say Eric Caden, Johnny Legend. Okay, yes. I'm hearing these names from the past. Eric Caden used to come to my club sometimes. Bill Osco, the one I made films with for years, he was an executive producer of Blood Diner, Underachievers, The Being, Night Patrol, all that stuff. But we got together, we made films for 15 years after that. That's why the director hates me. Yeah, there's her ex-husband. But we took over the Ritz Theater on Hollywood Boulevard and ran it for a year. That was right next door to Eric Caden's, you know.
Yeah.
So, but the guy from one of the producers from Blood Diner, he has all the movie. He owns all the Herschel Gordon Lewis, all the Nude on the Moon, Doris Wishman films, all the exploitation films. He owns them all. And actually, Weird Videos got them all, licensed them all from him. But that's what we would show at the Ritz Theater. We show the weirdest exploitation films we could possibly find.
Yeah.
And actually, we did it for a year, and we turned it over to Eric and Johnny Legend when we left. Yeah. But there was a lot of funny stuff that happened. We found these presents wrapped in the basement, you know, for Christmas, and they're empty. So we would go just out of boredom. We'd sit in the lobby. And we'd put a present on the street and time how long it took for someone to steal it. I should have shot it. I should have filmed it. It was so funny to see people walk by. And then they walk by again. And then go, bam, and it would be gone, you know. Just little stupid stuff like that. But actually, I screened Gross Out there. We were show Gross Out every Saturday night just to get it out there. And I had Kevin Thomas, LA Times, huge, huge comic, or a huge critic. And he was nice enough to come down for a private screening. And I'll never forget, I was there and I couldn't unlock the turnstile. So he had to crawl underneath the turnstile. I go, oh, great. There goes my review, you know. And he came in and he was really nice. He was in the theater all by himself. And we were screening the film for him. And Dino Lee was there. And we were waiting outside. You know Dino Lee?
Yeah, I did some stuff with him and Timothy Carr. I think he used to have a radio show, right?
Rusty DeFage.
Yes,
that's Dino Lee. Dino and I, we did Rusty DeFage for
Rusty
a year.
DeFage, yeah.
Yeah, that was a character we did in a movie called Urban Legends. We turned into a radio show. We got so much trouble for that. Oh, my God.
Oh, I remember. You were on KIEV. And,
KIEV, that's right.
We were,
and every morning I get a call from the director or from the owner of the station saying, Rusty cannot say he smells people's periods through the phone. Because it was a call-in show. Yeah, we were, I mean, like, yeah. And he was like, he played Rusty DeFage. What do you say? He said, I'm married and have 2.5 children. And he wore a big bouffant hairdo.
He wore the big hairdo.
And it was like hilarious. Yeah.
I met him working with Timothy Carey, the actor Timothy Carey on Insect Trainer. We were.
I know his son really well.
Yeah, Romeo. Romeo's a great guy. And Timothy was, you know, Timothy Carey, how you doing, Chris?
He's hilarious.
I'll kill you right here. Just kill you. I'm not even going to hurt you. I'll kill you. He's a big, big guy, a very menacing guy.
World's greatest sinner.
Yeah, world's greatest sinner. And one of his best things is Paths of Glory, because he literally steals the movie.
Wow.
I don't want to give it away, but see the movie Paths of Glory. And
okay.
It's amazing. You two are in the same circles, you know, the same people, and you only met 2 years ago.
Yeah, it is amazing.
I can't believe you know about Rusty DeFage. You know, I'm trying to get Dino to get all the old tapes. I have a page on Facebook, a tribute to Rusty DeFage, and we're trying to get all the old tapes. We got so much trouble. See, I traded commercial time. What I would do is I'd go out to stores, I'd walk in, get their brochures, I'd go right to the station, have commercials cut, and go right back and say, I can do this for this amount of money. Bam. I kept it on for a year that way.
Yeah.
And had a professional person do that, you know, so that worked. But
took calls, right? You would take calls and people would start screaming at him. And then he'd go off on the people. It was so funny.
Yeah. Oh, it was so funny. It was so funny. Well, the deal is that, you know, Phil Henry, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Check this out. We went into David Hall's office without an appointment. We said, oh, yeah, we're here to see David Hall. I'm sorry you don't have an appointment. Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah, go check again. We just
drove to Beverly Hills. I'm talking to the guy.
And she goes, Dave Hall. You don't have one. You don't have. And then he'd come out and he goes, get out of here. You know, and I was like, look, dude, I go, here is this. We've been doing this for a year. We got Saturday Night Live writers as our fans. Please just take a listen to it and see what you think. He stole our show and made the Phil Henry show. That is our show.
You know,
that is our show.
You know,
the
what
call-in show with the fake people, all I would do is go in the other room and I was Dusty DeFage's lesbian wife, and I called in as all these different characters. It was the funnest time ever. But I remember one night, it was like midnight to two Sunday night, and I did a commercial for a limousine company, so they give us limousine rides there and back, you know. So I get this picked up in this limousine, and this black guy was so funny.
He'd show up in the limousine and get out with the big haircut and everything.
Oh, yeah. No, well, we would go over to Glendale to pick Dino up, And, you know, he'd come out with his bouffant, you know, fully costumed for a radio show. It was great. He's such a professional. And we came around the corner and he wasn't there. And all of a sudden his Cadillac comes around the corner and crashes into a tree. And he was drunk and he was in a Rusty DeFoss costume. But see, he's been performing drunk for years. So he just gets out and gets the limo. And we did the whole show like he was depressed. And
it's frozen.
And so people are going, oh, Rusty, I'm so sorry. You know, hang in there. What we did was something that no one's ever done with paid for radio show. We went off 10 minutes early because he jumped out a window. He committed suicide on air.
Oh,
yeah.
That's hysterical. And
we got so much trouble. I mean, the cops, the fire department, 600 calls, the call next day from the owner. And the next weekend, he just, oh, I just jumped into a dipsy dumpster. You know, it was like, we just play. It was just, yeah, it was a mess. It was so much fun. Yeah.
Well, you just gave me a great idea. Not the suicide.
Don't jump out a window.
Let's do a commercial because Nicole's got our new sponsor she wants to talk about, I think.
Oh, I just smoked a little when I started the show. So,
oh, that was terrible.
Well, this is 100% CBD. It's a no marijuana, CBD only. So it's legal and you can smoke it anywhere.
So you don't get high?
Huh?
You don't get high?
You get high.
You get high from it, but there's no THC.
Right.
That makes sense.
It's a different high.
Renegade CBD and Renegade Kush.
Yep.
Made by the makers of Renegade Radio.
There
and
you go.
Not only do they have things to relax you and get you in the mood, as you can look at Nicole. Nicole, say something.
Oh, I don't know. Something.
Well, I've been looking at Nicole since the show started.
You guys be quiet. Nicole, say one thing.
I was just explaining that I get shipments of it and I get to test it out and it's all really good.
Well, I just wanted the audience to see, if they're watching this on YouTube, how happy and relaxed you are right now. And tell them about the bath products too.
Oh yeah, the bath bombs are amazing. They're so soft and they just relax your entire body.
And so CBD and bath products,
gummies.
Yep. And gummies, white chocolate. I'm still waiting on my white chocolate delivery. I was hoping to be here in time for trick or treating. Regular milk chocolate, and they're very delicious.
Wow.
They also do sugar-free products.
So everybody go to renegadecbd.com or renegadekush.com, and you can be as relaxed and happy as Nicole is right now.
Yay.
Such a deal.
So speaking of not being relaxed and happy, Joey, I just watched the Unsolved Mysteries you were on.
Ah.
Well, about the Comedy Store being haunted.
Yeah. It is haunted. But before I do that, I just want to tell Carl something. Phil Hendry, of course, I used to listen to his show all the time.
Yep.
And one afternoon, he was on in the afternoons, and one afternoon, and this is what he hated. He hated if somebody called up and wasn't a real person. So I called up. He was doing the guy who was, he was being racist about the golf course. I don't want the Dean Whitaker. And I don't like the blacks coming on the golf course with their big King Combo beers and making noise with the boombox. So I called up and said, I am the groundskeeper at Cheviot Hills. And this man is a damn horror. So I got past Schaefer. I got past him and I got on the line with Phil Hendry for about 20 minutes. Wow. And Phil Hendry really believed I was the guy. And the next day I'm listening to him and he goes, well, I'm going to play a piece of tape here and I'm going to tell this guy, I will find you. I'll kick your ass, buddy. You're good. You got through, buddy. You got through. It ain't going to happen again.
Oh,
and
wow.
He played it. And then, you know, every year he would put the CD out for my friend's place to raise money.
Wow.
And it's on, I think, the 2000 or 2001 CD. And he
Did
put that on
again?
There. No, I never spoke to the guy again. I'm afraid he'll punch me. But he doesn't know I'm the guy. He doesn't know that's me.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I never, you know, but it was really funny. You don't understand. I am a groundskeeper. We know black people have the right. And Dean Whitaker, of course, is going, well, you just sound like an old man. And old man, I'll take a a 9-iron and drive your head 250 yards, you know. And I said, even OJ can golf here. And that's when I think he, because I said Chevy and Hill,
got it.
I think that's when he got it and figured, oh, yeah. Wait a minute. But anyway, the Comedy Store.
Yeah, tell me about that.
But when I started to be a doorman there in 1977, I began to be a doorman, and I really wasn't getting a lot of spots. I wasn't very good yet. I was funny off stage, but I still hadn't figured out how to be funny on stage. So I would get some spots here and there, you know, and do the Mondays and everything. And Mitzi asked me to work. Do I want to be a doorman, which would afford me dropout spots and things like right. that. So this one particular night, I asked if I can close up. I said, sure. And they show me what to do. Here's where the lights are. Lou Deck showed me where all the lights are and everything to close up. This was long before it looks like it does now. It was still Art LeBeau's next door, the old right. rock and roll club, and which used to be Ciro's. And then I'll yep. tell you why there's a reason the ghosts are active when I'm there. At least I believe so.
So Art LeBeau's is where the main stage is now, and that used to be Ciro's.
Right. So it's the end of the night. Everybody's gone, and I go in the back. And it's there's nobody in the club. I've got the key to lock up. Well, I didn't even have keys. It was just closed the doors. They locked on their own. And I go in the back, and I reach, and I can't feel the lights. So I go in there for like 10, maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And I can feel the light switches, and I turn all the lights off, the marquee, all of that. I come out, and I'm looking. This is right off the left of the stage. If you walk up on the stage, and then you would go to your right, and then there's the lights. And I, at that time, and I come back out, and there, the chairs were stacked to the ceiling.
Wow.
Just like a pyramid going up. And I didn't say anything. I just ran out of the building, shut all the doors, ran out of the building. Another time I did the same thing. I closed up, and there was one other guy in the building. He was in the other room, and I shut the lights in the main room. And as I come off stage and I'm walking back to go to where the kitchen is to go back into the Comedy Store, because it was still Art LeBeau's, that as I'm walking, the chairs began to move in front of me, just literally like slide in front. And I ran out of there. And no. But the reason, and then there was a lot of activity when I started to work there all the time, me and Harris Peterby smoking cigars, which apparently cigar smoke in Santeria is, they use it to bring the spirits. And well, we don't know that. We're walking around doing gangster dialogue from, you know, 30s movies, 40s movies. Hey, you dames, better get those trays out, you know, and all that. Now I go to find out. Now all of a sudden there's a bunch of activity going on, like they've never had before. And I mean, there was stuff happening in there that it just so much, so many things. me and the late Louis Lista would be leaving. He was the bar manager, and we'd be walking out, and we'd close the back door, which now leads to sacred ground there. And we'd close the back door, and there'd be a pounding on the door immediately. Wow. I mean, a pounding like bam, 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 bam. And I went to open the door, and Louis, no, don't open it. And I'm like, no, open it. And then the foul smell, and we got out of there. And a few years later, around 82, I was talking to my uncle, who was, his name was Dominic Sonny DeFalco. And he was a major ticket broker, but he was also known as a bookmaker. He was a known bookmaker, gambler, etc. And he sits me down and he says, so you got ghosts at the Comedy Store. That's funny. He goes, yeah, you know, I used to go there when it was Ciro's. I said, yeah, I would imagine you did. It was a big nightclub. He goes, oh, yeah, I used to bring, what's his name, the gangster.
Al Capone?
No. The guy that, Jesus Christ, I'm getting old. I can't remember names. They made the movie about him. Sean Penn played him.
It wasn't Mickey Cohen. That was
Mickey Cohen. Jesus,
right?
And right. He said, "I was a bag man for Mickey Cohen. I used to pick up the bets from Sinatra and Dean Martin and all these other celebrities at the studios and then bring the money to them. This was like in the 50s. I said, really? He goes, yeah, I was, you know. And Mickey Cohn died in, I think, 75. And one time I worked for my uncle in a ticket office down in Anaheim when I was like 20. And the phone rang. And, you know, now, hello, Troy Tickets, da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, this Mickey Cohen, is Sonny around? Oh, no, you got to get him at this number, Mr. Cohen. Da, 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 da. And I didn't know who he was. I don't know the history of California gangsters or anything. It just, this guy sounded like, hey, you know. And then my uncle called me and said, hey, thanks for, you know who that is, don't you? I said, no, yeah, it's Mickey Cohen. Da, da, da. And I'm like, oh, great. Now the FBI is going to come to my house. So
tell Nicole and Carl what happened when you went to the basement.
Oh, in the basement. What?
Oh, basement of the Comedy Store.
Down in the basement.
You're not supposed to go down there.
No. Well, now it's a podcast room and everything. And
who
I was
told
working...
you you're not supposed to go down there?
Well, at the time, it wasn't a good... Me, I tell everybody, don't go down there alone because there's... there. Look, in the basement of the of Ciro's, on that side where the original room is now in the Comedy Store, in the basement, it was dark, dank, and there's a room all the way to the back. In that room, and it's documented... Frank Senes, who owned Ciro's, which was at that time in the 40s and 50s, a hangout for mobsters, as well as celebrities, all everybody. I mean, that's who mixes elbows in Hollywood.
Yep.
Still to this day. Ask any coked up actor. But anyway, you'd go in the basement.
Like the 50s was like I Love Lucy. Like they would have like a big band and a whole thing and it was everybody would dress up. It was a night out.
Right. Martin and Lewis would be there. Sinatra was there. Sammy Davis. Everybody played Ciro. Ciro's was the Hollywood spot.
Right.
The way the Roxy is now for a band to showcase. Okay. So Frank Senes, you know, there were showgirls. They would do the floor show. And Frank Senes had a retired nurse down in the basement to take care of two things. If there was a fist fight, and somebody got beat up or shot, bring them down here, see if we could get fixed up. Or if a gangster or celebrity knocked up a showgirl, she could go downstairs and abort the baby.
Wow.
Now, one night we did a seance in the main room.
Key. And, there you go.
With Sam Kinison.
Oh,
and I
a really loud seance.
Well, no, we heard a baby cry. They heard a baby cry. I left. I didn't want to do the seance, but I've heard the baby.
Who is there doing the seance?
They're all dead. Mostly Fred Asparagus, Sam Kinison, Carla Bow, a couple of other people.
I'm just thinking of Sam Kinison, like screaming at the ghost. Come on, come on, come on.
No, you know? No, they were very serious. They got serious and I didn't want to be in that.
Get out of here, you fucking asshole. You know, something.
Well, like that. Yeah, no. I love Sam.
Here's what happened to me in there that was one of the most amazing things. First of all, one time me and Blake Clark and Eddie Merrill went down in the basement and suddenly we're walking around and all of a sudden, like this black entity, this shadow just comes up out of the floor and we're looking at it. And I stuck my hands out and they got as hot as fire. And Blake said to me, my palms, and Blake said to the thing, what do you want? And there were nameplates stacked that they would use in La Jolla to put in the window. They slide him in that. And a nameplate went bam on the floor. And when he picked it up and turned it over, it was his name. It was Blake Clark. Wow. So we got the hell out of there. We went up, we got out of there.
See, when and, these are not, I don't know what happened. Oh, there you go.
All right,
these are not dead people that are haunting this place.
Huh?
They're not dead people, spirits that are haunting this
place. We don't know what's haunting the joint. I'll tell you
what. Well, I can tell you what's haunting the joint. If anyone's done a seance, they've opened a portal.
Oh, believe me, I can tell you, Carl, what's there. You see, Monday nights was potluck night.
And
hundreds, thousands of people have gone through there on those Monday nights, all desperate to get discovered. And what does an evil entity love? Anxiety. Prey on the ego of the intimidated or whatever, the fearful. Right. So it on Monday nights was the nights and Saturday nights, but Mondays would be the night if I wanted to hang around in there, stuff would happen. And lots of stuff happened in there. And
Joey, can I ask? Yeah. And this is a weird subject to bring up, but I'm curious. Were you there when the guy committed suicide?
I wasn't there that night, but that was my friend, Steve Lebetkin. And a few months after he committed suicide, I was standing out in the parking lot there with Mitch Walters, Richard Belzer, quite a few of us were standing there. And it was near Easter, about a year, almost a year later. It was near Easter time. And I remember that. It was like April, almost a year later. And we were talking about different things. And all of a sudden, first of all, the morning after he committed suicide, I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't at the club. And I had a dream of Steve whispering in my ear, swear to God, I'm not making this up. Tell him I wasn't trying to be funny. Tell him I wasn't being funny. And I woke up and then I got a phone call that he committed suicide. So that night we're standing in the parking lot. It was a Saturday night and I'm working. I'm doing the door, but I'm in my jacket and that, and I have a couple of minutes break. And all of a sudden I'm standing there and it felt like someone embraced me and I turned bright white and passed out.
Wow.
And Belzer and the guys caught me before I'd fall and break my head. And they took me out to the front, laid me on a bench, got me some water, got me around. And Mitchell was standing there, the late Mitchell Walters. And I said, oh man, I don't know what happened, but I just felt like somebody walked up and gave me a big embrace. And I just lost everything. I've never fainted in my life. And he just looked at me and he went, that was Stevie giving you a hug because you never laughed at him when he jumped. You've never made any jokes. I said, that's right. I never have. And as a matter of fact, I was running the open or Monday nights at Westwood. And about a week after he jumped, two assholes got up and started singing a song. I'm standing on the 15th floor. I see a vision of Mitzi Shore. I was on stage. I was fat, but I was on stage so fast. Bob fucking Hayes wouldn't have caught me if anybody knows who he was. And I had the mics out of their hands and hit the road. I threw them off.
Good.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, and then Westwood, too, after Freddie Prinze died, I was at that time, I was the manager, cleanup man, bar manager, everything there. And I was in there at about 3 a.m. cleaning up, getting it all ready for the next day. And I look over and I see something in the wall coming out and then it disappeared. And it was a guy with long hair and a leather jacket, just kind of. And I had a tape of Freddie Prinze live at the Anaheim Convention Center, the KHJ Cavalcade Christmas show. And I had taped a lot of it. I had a cassette tape in late 75. And I erased it and put Steely Dan over it. Hey. So anyway, I'm playing, it's on the radio, and all of a sudden the Steely Dan music stops in the middle of one of the songs, Katie Lied or something. And I hear, and everybody knows that, you know, Puerto Ricans, they think we make roaches. Like when we leave Puerto Rico, you put jars of roaches. We all get a jar of roaches here. You go to New York, you go to California, you go here. And I stood there and I froze. And then the music came back on. I took the tape home. I went over that tape 1,000 times, right at that fucking spot on the tape, and nothing, just music. Right. Wow. And that was the most frightening thing because Freddie, I used to park his Vette when he was at the Improv. I would be there on a Sunday night and flipping the keys, and I'd park his Corvette. Well, I wouldn't park and I'd take it up on Mulholland. And come
well,
back.
when you were starting comedy, he was the biggest star.
He was the biggest star I ever met in my life. I met him through Byron Allen.
Wow.
At the time, Byron was a kid and he introduced me to Freddie at Westwood, and Freddie called us Kitty Comics. He was calling us the Kitty Comics. And
you and Byron Allen are still Kitty Comics to me. Carl,
he's the a CIA
for all this macabre imagery. Is it haunted?
Say it again.
I said the CIA, your club.
No, is it haunted? I make sure it's not. We have 3 dead bodies from 100 years ago in our museum, and we've had 2 paranormal investigations here, and they were really pissed they couldn't find anything. There was one lady, she was from Erie, California. She's a very nice English lady, and she had a cameraman and another girl, and she was just mystified when she went all over by my dead clown, the 2 dead Chinese magicians. They just couldn't find anything. See, but first of all, when people say they want to do a paranormal investigation, I have rules. Okay. You can't use a Ouija board. You can't use a scrying mirror. You can't use any occultic objects. You can't do that. Sorry. You can use cameras that detect electromagnetic radiation, that's fine. But anything else, baby, Papa don't take no mess.
Joey, why are you giving the thumbs up to that? Because I don't know.
Because all of that stuff is going to open up doors you can't close.
I can't close them, but I don't want to mess.
You don't need it.
But no, this is the deal. So they were backstage, right? And the cameraman was behind her and her friend, and they were walking down the hallway of the backstage in the dark. And don't turn around. There's six eyes looking at you from up right up there. And she turned around, oh my God, there they are. And they got closer and closer. And it was a mirror ball. Hello. But the deal is, when they came back out on stage, there were orbs. Now, when people investigate, do ghost investigations, child, they bring stuff with them. It follows them. Yeah. So, when they leave, like I say, Papa don't take no mess. Believe me, I have ways of cleaning this place. And it's not sage. That's their favorite scent, by the way. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to sage your place. Oh, don't do that. They'll love it. Get out of here. These are not dead body, dead people spirits. Dead people do not haunt the earth. These are basically demonic entities that love to fool you. I went to that seance and I heard Aunt Millie's voice heard a little dog barking and I could smell her perfume. It must be her.
No.
Well, these are entities that have been around for thousands of years. Yeah. They know exactly what it's going to take to suck you in.
You're right. You can't.
It's a big hoax. Biblically, God forbade the occult in the Bible. Why did he do that? Because you're opening yourself to deception.
Exactly.
From who? The father of lies. Hello. Any entities that are working with him, they're all a bunch of liars. Thousands of years to make this fabric of lies. Well, this goes back before Christianity. Oh, really? You're going to go back before? You can't predate the creator, baby. Yeah.
No. I will tell you this. I did a few years back, about 10 years ago, we did the Halloween tour of the Comedy Store. Right. The late Jeff Scott did it. He called up me and Blake to be guests on it. We did the first show. Blake did it with me. There was only a half house in the main room. But then word got out that I was on the show and Blake didn't want to do any more of it because one time was enough for him. He doesn't like that stuff, being a Vietnam vet, etc. But he, quick plug, I'm dedicating tonight to John Zachary of Horrible Horrors. Okay. Anyway, my favorite ghoul. And there was paranormal people there. And right. I'm going around we're taking a bunch of people touring around showing them things. And the paranormal guy says to me, well, now you're not wearing a cross or anything, are you? I said, I wear a cross every day. Well, the entities, I went, listen, dude, if you're stupid enough to walk into something and you're not protected, that's your problem. So then the second week we went down in the basement and the paranormal guy said he was there on Thursday night and he taped some voices and the voices were going, he's a wizard. He's a priest. Oh, his friend's coming. He's a wizard. He's a priest. No, he's a priest and a wizard. And they're going, who's he talking about? I said, well, I'll guarantee you they're talking about Sam Kinison. And his friend is coming. Maybe they knew I'm coming. So maybe that's what it is. So then that night, Saturday night, we set up a thing to record voices. And there's a crowd in there. And a lot of weird stuff went on in the basement that night. The sensor lights are going on and off and no one's moving. It got freezing cold down there. And I said, okay, look, you can't come home with me. That's one of the first things you got to say. You can't come home with me. You have to stay here. You are not invited. Okay? And that's one of the first things you got to say. See, Dracula can't come in your house unless you.
Yeah, that's just going to say it. That's mythological.
It's mythological. But if you tell them no, you're 90% of the time. Well, actually, it's worked for me, thank God. But, I protect myself. But anyway, I said, okay, tell them who the wizard priest is. Tell them who I am and let's get this over with. Basically, it's how I said it. I went on. So he plays the tape back and the tape goes, you hear me say on the tape, All right, tell them who the wizard is. And you hear a woman's voice go, Sam K. Sam K.
Wow.
And then I said, and who, and you hear me saying, who am I? And a male voice goes, you're a gay Canadian. And I busted out laughing. You know, you hear me? And I started laughing. And then another guy goes, no, no, he's my friend, but I don't come there anymore.
Wow.
It was sounded like a little like Andy. And I knew it's not Andy because if you're going to get visitation from a lost friend or relative, it'll happen in a dream. They'll smile at you and that's all they'll do. And you'll wake up with tears in your eyes. And that I learned from my American native Indian comedian friend, Charlie Hill. And and that's true. When I've dreamt of my mom smiling at me and I wake up and there's tears in my eyes, I think I know that was a visitation. But nobody has ever appeared in the doorway or whatever. Yeah. That's all, you know.
Joey, I'm going to take
But I've had, my father passed away in 2017, and there is something called an event and a dream. And I don't believe dead people can come back to you in dreams. I don't believe they have any ability to do that. Of course, God can do anything he wants. And there are things that happen that could be, you know, it's not supernatural. It's your own beautiful memories, you know, like your own inner dealing, how you deal with it as it manifests that. I had a dream and my dad, I remember I so clearly, it was actually 6 months ago. I was like somewhere and I just turned around. And I saw my dad walk in, you know, when he was like 30 and he goes, you ready to go? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, and I couldn't get out. Is this real? Is this real? Dude, it was so real.
Yeah.
Okay. But it was different. It wasn't a dream. It was an event. So whatever that was inside of me that created that, I don't believe that. Let's see. Hold on. There we go. Decline that call. I don't believe that. Now, let me tell you something. We don't wear a cross for protection. I don't wear a cross for protection. I wear a cross because it is symbolic of who I believe in.
Well, yeah, I agree with you there. When I say protection, what I mean is when they say to me, oh, don't bring rosary beads or don't do this. It's like, you know, look, I have a relic around my neck. I have a Saint Michael cross.
You know, you can take medication for that.
Yeah.
No, but
I'm a practicing Catholic. I really,
I know you are. Yeah.
I saw a lot of stuff when I was a kid. I watched my father pass away for 2 years he was in his deathbed for 2 years. And, the thing was that after he passed away, I did see him look through the window a couple of times. I wasn't nuts because one time, some years back, my niece said to me, when I would come to the house in Newark, New Jersey, who was that man looking through the window with the glasses? And I went, you saw that too? She said, yeah. I said, that was your grandfather. So it's weird how, I can't explain any of this. I can only say what my experience is and what I've done. I mean, I was an altar boy. I never was molested, blah, blah, blah. I'd be in the church at 5:30. And you want to be somewhere scary? Being a Catholic church at 5:30 in the morning and sitting in the sacristy by yourself, waiting for the priest to get there and hear things like, you know, and then you go and peer out there and there's nobody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, so.
Wait, Carl, Joey, by the way, Nicole, we're going to go overtime as you might expect. And I knew that when we began. Because we're almost an hour now. When these guys start talking, you can't stop them. But Carl, I was listening to a podcast you were on recently, and I know your family is the foremost authority on Bigfoot. You've been working on a Bigfoot documentary.
No, it's a feature film. My great uncle. My great uncle, Jerry Crew, named Bigfoot. He took the first plaster cast in 1958 on Mount Shasta.
Right.
He took it into the Humboldt Times and it went global in 1958. And he was a logger. And my father was there. And my father logged his way through medical school. And my other uncle, Jim, was there. So I've heard this history all my life growing up about Bigfoot. And I met Jerry as a kid. But I'm the only writer in the family. And I spent 2 years writing his story. And the whole concept was taking it down from the legend, all the bull that people have built into it, and getting it down to the absolute truth of what Bigfoot is, and that it's very real. And it's not demonic.
Grandfather's name again? I'm sorry.
It's my great uncle's name is Jerry Crew. Type in Jerry Crew Bigfoot. Any cryptozoologist, you mention Jerry Crew, they go, oh. I had two guys from Missing in Alaska, Ken Gearhart, who's a expert on Bigfoot and Mothman and stuff. He speaks all over the country. He came here for a tour, and I told him about my great uncle, and he freaked out. He was like, oh my goodness, I can't even believe it. So, it was my responsibility to actually write the script. So I just finished it about 3 months ago. Now, and stacks of yellow newspaper articles that's been saved for years, for 40 years by my uncle, about my great uncle, and magazines. And I got to interview Peter Burns, who is 96 now. And he was the guy who hired my great uncle and my other uncle to hunt Bigfoot for 2 years. He hunted the Yeti in the Himalayas. And he worked for Tom Slick, the famous eccentric millionaire from Texas. That's who. It's just so many crazy characters. It's amazing.
The theory that you said on the show, and it kind of got glossed over, I want to make sure I got this right, is that it was a really big Native American?
It's human. Yeah, it's human. There's no... the thing is, if you understand anything about the of evolution, there's two types of evolution. There's macroevolution, which is totally fake. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have 10 different iconic, Lucy, Nebraska man, and they're all like the pig bone, they're like a pig tooth that they created this whole thing around. Every single one has been debunked, yet evolutionary scientists refuse to let a divine foot in the door. So there's no evidence, but tens of billions of years. That's why there's no evidence, you know. It's ridiculous. It's a religion. Macroevolution is a religion. Now there's microevolution. That is the adaptation of species different, like why are the dogs in Antarctica, all covered in fur, and it's a species or an entity adapting to their environment. And in the 1700s, there's been stories about wild man in the woods for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. But in the 1700s, there were earthquakes so big, the Mississippi flowed backwards. Yeah. And parts of Oregon, the mountains decimated, fell down and changed river courses. And the Indians back then, they didn't have any, way to communicate, like no TV, phones, anything. I mean, smoke signals, maybe. Yeah. But they all went mad. And they ran into the woods, and through selective breeding, mm-hmm. basically they had to adapt to living in the woods. And, that's what I believe Bigfoot are. Bob Gimlin, my great uncle drew the map for Bob Gimlin 7 years later to shoot the famous footage of Bigfoot walking. Yeah. Right. They just interviewed me on a podcast called Western Bigfoot Exploration. They were Creek.
I'm going to. Afterwards, Carl, I'm going to get in touch with you. I'm going to put you in touch with a friend of mine who has a Bigfoot podcast called Monstrosity.
Cool. I got one coming up on the second. I do them all the time.
Yeah.
Very cool. I love it.
Did you know Gene Bell from Trankus?
I like that people are listening to podcasts while they're on my podcast. But
No. I'm sorry. I just blanked
out. I'm kidding, Joey. It's okay.
No. But did you know Gene Bell, who owned Trankus?
No,
Malibu in Trankus, Trankus in Malibu, the rock and roll club. When you go into Trankus, the rock and roll club, the walls were adorned with Bigfoot plaster casts.
Wow.
Possible photos, sketches, maps, stories.
Is it just still there?
No, Trankus is gone, but I don't know where Gene Bell is, but it was his collection. And he was dead serious about Bigfoot, man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There's no question. I mean, I have one of the original plaster casts, and it's been in my family the whole time. My father used to spray down the roads because the dust was so thick. You couldn't drive anything over because the dust was so thick. So he was doing that to go through medical school. But my other uncle, Jim, who's still alive, he helped me a lot in this. And I also know Jerry Crew's son, Wade, and they helped me a lot in this. It was amazing. It was amazing. But anyway, Western Bigfoot Exploration did a 2-hour interview with me, the longest one I ever had, and I showed him everything that I have, and they were literally up at Bluff Creek the week before, because it was the Patterson Gimlin site they actually went to. But yeah, he drew that map that ended up in their hands. So that's how they found that place. My point is this, is that Gimlin was there with a gun. And when he was interviewed, they said, why didn't you shoot it? Why didn't you shoot it? He goes, I would have shot it if it came after me, like it was going to kill me. But the reason I didn't shoot it was because it was too human. It looked human. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Now, is this an overly hairy human, you think?
Well, obviously.
I mean,
they're Armenian.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, there we go again. Who knows? Okay. So, obviously, they're
like Robin Williams type, like body hair.
Yeah, they've grown huge, and because of how they eat, and because when you get into the like syncopation with what the rhythm of living in the forest with nothing, you know, you're the protein and the interbreeding, and like, yeah, I mean, you adapt. So that's what I really believe they are. I believe they're human, but they're just, yeah, it's very interesting.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? Nicole?
What? I'm sorry.
Renegade CBD and Renegade Kush. Do you believe in
Bigfoot? No, I was reading a text message. I'm supposed to be somewhere right now. It's okay.
You should have cut to her with a big bong, yeah.
Do you believe in Bigfoot?
Do I believe in Bigfoot?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, it's okay. You can take medication for that.
You think Carl might be right that it was just a really big guy that was living in the woods?
I don't have an opinion about it.
I've never been a Bigfoot enthusiast. Anyway, I'm kidding, Nicole. Joey.
It's okay. I'll be right back. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I understand. Joey, we didn't get too far into, because I actually live right, so like half a block from the House of Pies, Forrest J. Ackerman Square. And we touched on it, but we didn't really get into it when you worked for Famous Monsters Magazine.
Yeah, I worked for Famous Monsters Magazine, 1981. Yeah, and I worked for 4E, and 4E Ackerman was a very eccentric guy. And I started to work there as his assistant, and he lived in John Hall's old house, which is up, you go up into Griffith Park. Yeah. John Hall's. No, John Hall.
Well, John Holmes. Okay. I thought you
said John Holmes. John Hall, Ramar of the Jungle, you know.
Right, right. Okay.
So John Hall's house. And Forey's backyard was very strange. It was the weeds, the full foliage and everything, 6 foot high.
Wow.
His wife asked me to go cut it. I told her I had asthma. What are you, nuts? You're going to want me to go out there with a thing and cut it. And I was sitting outside one day on the patio, and I'm looking at this jungle going on there in Los Feliz. And I saw something crawl up the tree, like a tree sloth or something. I don't know what it was, some weird animal. And I said, I'm never going to go down into those weeds. And then another night, it was weird there. I came out to, I would throw out the, I'd empty the waste baskets, you know, and everything at the end of the day. And there was a skinny dog out there. And I'm going, what's the matter, dog? What's the matter? I realized it was a coyote.
Oh, wow.
And came face to face with that. And then working with Forey was interesting because he put me in charge of photos. That's what he said. You're in charge of photos. And every day, like that many photos would come in from different movies and stuff.
Wow.
I got to sort them and file them and sort them. So the movie Conan was coming out. And he's got the Conan file on his desk. And he's looking. And I can hear him going, oh, big muscle man. Joey, why don't you pick out the pictures you like for this, and we'll use them for the Conan spread in the magazine. You want me to pick out the photos? Okay. So I picked out, I really did. If you get the magazine where they cover Conan, I picked out the best photos. Well, getting chopped off, I picked out great stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. And about 5 months later, I'm walking down the street in Westwood, and who do I walk right up next to, and I can't believe it, is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, wow.
And he'll talk to you. Hey, I said, hey, Mr. Schwarzenegger. Oh, call me Arnold. Okay, Arnold, I'm Joey. Nice to meet you. I work at Famous Monsters. Oh, do you? And I said, yeah, I picked all the photos for the spread in Famous Monsters. And he just looked at me, shook my head, and went, oh, that was very good. You got the good ones. Yeah, because sometimes they pick the crummy ones, like the stuff for sitting down. That's who wants to see me sitting down eating. I want to, with the sword, they want to see the action shots, you know. So, yeah, it was great. And then eventually I left there. It was a very political job. Eric Caden, you know, used to tell me, you know, you're being used as a tool up there. He's just going to hire his old assistant back. And but I did get to buy some great stuff. I got like the Ronald Reagan title card for Bedtime for Bonzo.
Wow. Wow.
For a dollar.
Such a deal.
He didn't like Reagan. But if you took a picture from a Hammer film, like it was just a stupid photo of nothing, it was $50. He'd won $50 because it's a Hammer.
See, look what I'm wearing.
There you go.
Very nice.
Yeah, baby. Hammer films, yes.
Hammer's awesome.
I gotta watch more of those. Oh, yeah. I haven't seen too many.
Oh, they're hilarious.
So, Joe and Carl.
With the big, the funny, like, curved vampire fangs they used on all the girls. Hilarious, hilarious.
It's great.
One time, I was driving up Lancashire Boulevard with my business partner, and we pull up next to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the window was down. I go, hey, Arnie! And he looked at Bob. He thought Bob was the one that said it. He flipped him off and drove away.
That's great. That's great.
What's your favorite Hammer movie, Carl?
Oh, I don't know. All the vampire movies make me laugh. You know, they're just, they're a lot darker now that I watch them. You know, I mean, they were great as a kid. I used to watch Creature Features in San Francisco. That was Bob Wilkins. So as a kid, it was like, you know, every Saturday night, all the Hammer films they played, all that stuff. Yeah. So,
for me, there's
kind
only
of dark now when you look at them.
For me, there's only one Dracula. It's not Bela Lugosi. Because when I was about 8, we went to the movies to see Curse of Frankenstein,
right?
Which was hard for me to understand as a kid because it wasn't the Frankenstein square head makeup. It was Christopher Lee all slashed up. But the second film, Horror of Dracula.
Right.
In the film, when Christopher Lee makes his first appearance at the top of the stairs as Dracula. Wow.
Yes.
You look at him and you go, this is Dracula.
Yes, yes, I agree. I love Bella, but
not even Frank Langella could be.
Yeah. Horror Dracula, okay.
The He's great, brilliant in it.
Brilliant.
It's one of the best Dracula films ever. And he made a lot of them after that, but for me, it's whenever there's Dracula, it's Christopher Lee.
Yeah, even when I see Sauron in The Hobbit, I think of Dracula. He was in a movie called Hugo, where he played an old shop owner, bookstore owner, but still you could see the Dracula.
Oh, he was Fu Manchu, and he was Dracula. You know?
Yeah, I will watch Horror of Dracula this weekend. Yeah, apparently either a ghost or my fat ass knocked down my green screen. But Carl, speaking of that, in my eyes, there's only one Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh,
and that's you.
God bless you.
But when I met you 100 years ago, when you were playing shitty horror movies at your place, and I said, I got to start playing there, it was you and Jeremy Renner. Now there's so many movies that have come up since then.
Yeah, but the funny thing is,
making movies about Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, the funny thing is we were the first. And I'm the only one that can say that Dahmer saw my movie in prison before he was murdered.
Wow.
I was interviewed in front of Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment door before they tore it down. And I know Anthony Hopkins went in and went to that visit the apartment too before they shot Silence of the Lamb. Wow. But I would love to talk with Anthony Hopkins. He's amazing. But I was the only one I met. I got a chance to meet Dahmer, actually. I didn't want to. But I did talk to his stepmother. But we did, you know, we flew back to Milwaukee. We did Milwaukee's Talking, and we were on the show. And that's when we met all the family members. And we said, yeah, you know, we told them about it. And, you know, it's of course, there's going to be a movie made about one of the most heinous serial killers ever to live, you know. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay, you know. But by the time we get to Maury Povich, like 2 months later, they whipped him into a frenzy. It was like the barbecue Carl Cruise show. Yeah. Right. And I'm a debater. I love it. But I got slapped. You Jeffrey Dahmer number two.
It could be worse.
I mean,
you are the father. It could have been worse.
I wrote the
yeah. Well, no, this
the theme song for your movie. I wrote the theme song.
Thing, yeah. This is when he was in New York.
I wrote the theme song for your movie, but I don't think it ever got to you. It was Dahmer, Dahmer, oh, Jeffrey Dahmer, ate my heart, wife's body part, then he farts, oh, I know a guy who likes, okay, never mind.
Oh, man, you're killing me. And I've heard every Dahmer joke you could possibly imagine. Actually, when I flew back from New York after the show, I got on the plane. I was sitting right next to Dom DeLuise and Peter DeLuise.
Wow.
When I was 17, I interviewed Dom DeLuise at the Fairmont Hotel, which was right above the high school I went to in San Francisco. I went to a school on Knob Hill, it's a private school, and two blocks up was Fairmont. And I called him up one day in journalism class. I said, "Yeah, who's playing there?" And they go, "Dom DeLuise." I go, "Okay, click." Called it back, "Dom DeLuise, please." They put me right through. "Hello." He answered the phone. I said, "Yeah, I want an interview. I'm doing a paper on you." So he invited us up to the show. And we went up there, and it was so funny. I took my girlfriend, Natasha Petrovna Lushikov, 6-foot-tall blonde. I just talked to her the other day. I haven't talked to her for 30 years. We roared laughing. We went up there, and we took the elevator up, and we see the entrance of his suite. And he swings out on a swing that he attached to. "Hello!" And he swung back in. It was like, he's insane. He was crazy. So we went back saw the show, went back the next day and interviewed him. And then he called me a couple of days later. "Oh, yeah, I'd like to borrow that tape." Never saw it again. So I confronted him on the plane. "Where's my tape?" Yeah, it was really funny. Yeah. Yeah, he was funny. I loved him from 12 Chairs. That was one of my favorite movies he did. Mel Brooks. I grew up on Mel Brooks.
Right. So. But yeah, nothing impressed a woman that, like, nothing impressed a woman like, "Let's go check out Dom DeLuise." But,
yeah, it was just cool to get out, you know, like we're 17 years old.
I'm kidding. I know. It is cool. But I mean, they just came. Some people have been telling me that My Friend Dahmer's pretty good and there's these other Dahmer movies. It's like the whole thing that separates your movie, which I recommend people watch however they can, from the other ones is that you tell the whole story. And well, I know the Jeremy Renner one tells a portion of the story. My Friend Dahmer tells a portion of the story. I think these other ones kind of tell a portion of the story, but everybody says that yours is the most accurate and the most complete.
Well, I literally wrote it from police interviews with Jeffrey. So 90% of the dialogue is all his words, his actual words. And, the irony is the same guy who gave me a great review for Gross Out, he called it thunderingly, gleefully tasteless, Kevin Thomas of the LA Times.
Right.
He wrote an article that said Dahmer, the Jeremy Renner film, falls terribly short of the truth. And then he talked about my film, saying it was far more accurate, even though it was very low budget. So that was kind of cool. Yeah, I love that.
And I'm
actually writing part two right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So what's going to be in part
dessert.
Two?
It's called Dessert. No.
Yeah. No, it's actually it's the prison years of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, interesting.
And there was 3 years. And he actually became a Christian in prison.
Huh.
He took a Bible course. People go, "Oh, yeah, that's just a deathbed confession, blah, blah, blah." You know, no. He took a Bible course in prison. And he was blown away by it. And he actually had the minister who had the Bible course come down and meet him weekly. And finally he said, "Well, I want to accept Jesus, but you know what? I can't imagine that God could ever forgive me for what I've done." And he struggled with that for months. And he finally, the guy said, "No, it doesn't matter what you did. Here you are and you're ready to just give it all over." And so he became a Christian, but then he wanted to be baptized. And they wouldn't let him be baptized. And he actually got a hold of another pastor who snuck in and baptized him. And 2 weeks later, he was murdered.
Wow.
Yeah. So, it's baby, great, if Jeffrey Dahmer can go to heaven, baby.
Well, that's a great concept.
It's going to blow people's minds. Yeah.
It's actually a faith-based movie. I kind of want to watch
it. Absolutely, it is. It really is.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
But you'll have to hand off the role.
The title is called So As Through Fire.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you feel weird handing off the role to another person?
No, I want to play the priest. I want to play the pastor.
There you go.
And I'm too old now to play Jeffrey. Yeah,
I was gonna say, you can, the other actor better be on top, because every review of your movie, I've told this to you before, I've never seen a bad review about your acting in that movie. It was just terrific.
Well, the only they trashed it when it first came out. They trashed it. Everyone jumped on it. It was like, oh, let's attack this, you know. And but then eventually it got better reviews, and there were some people in it that I, you know, like I, you never promise your brother to put his girlfriend in a movie. Never do that. Never, never do that.
Yeah,
yeah.
But even the bad reviews said you were good, though. The only
I know I couldn't believe some of the reviews were really, really cool. So
the only negative is that you're a bigger, bulkier guy than he was. That's the right. only negative I've ever seen.
Yeah, but they said I was magnetic. So yeah, I still pick up bends that way.
Carl, I can attest to that. Joe, speaking of magnetism and movies, you got to tell Nicole and our audience the Brigitte Nielsen story and tell us how she was to work with.
Brigitte was, I did a movie called Galaxis. And the reason I show this is the Greek videotape release, the PAL release.
Okay? Wow.
Called Galaxis, or the original title was Terminal Force. And they changed it because there were 18 Terminal movies coming out at time. Everybody had Terminal.
Terminal.
So I got the part with Freddie Asparagus. The director is the guy that did all the special effects for Army of Darkness, Bill Mesa.
Wow.
And this movie, it's amazing. In the movie, I have a Greek name. I play Razor Stavros. I'm the henchman of Freddie Asparagus, who's the bad guy. He plays Victor. It was Victor Menendez, and they changed it to Victor Menendax because of the Menendez trial. It's like, who's the name? Anyway, the movie came out, and the company went bankrupt. It was very funny, and it came out. The movie actually came out on videotape 2 days before my mom passed away, so she got to see it.
Wow,
it's unbelievable. But when it was in when it was in France, in Greece, when it came out, because I'm the only character in the movie with a Greek name, Stavros, last name. It comes out in Greece on PAL, okay? And on the back, for the first time, other than Comedy's Dirtiest Dozen, because we're all in the box,
right?
There I am, okay? I'm like treated like a co-star. My picture is there, getting blown up in the alley, and then this one, and another one. And so in Greece, and the funniest thing is, I worked with her, and she's really nice. She was very nice. And I hardly ever spoke to her. And one day I was there, and I'm only 5'8", and I had a crew cut for this movie, and I looked like Curly. And I'm standing there, and she goes, you. And I went, yes, Miss Nielsen. She goes, come over here. And I'm like, all right, start a movie. I walk over. She goes, you never say hello. You never say nothing to me. I'm like, well, you're busy. I don't want to bother you. Oh, come here, little man. And in front of the whole cast, she does a Jane Mansfield, Mickey Rooney, and just crushes me. When she finally let go, I turned around and I went, it's great being 5'8". Like 2 days before we're going to wrap on the movie, her husband at the time was a race car driver, and her son was there, and they had a dog. And the dog, it was important. That's her dog. I mean, she loves her dog, and the kid, and they're looking for the. So the dog disappears. They don't know where the dog is. And it's getting to the end of the day, and she's really pissed. She's yelling at her husband, the dog, and you're better than it about the dog. And I'm standing there, and I'm going, if I was a dog, where would I go? And I said, I know where the dog is. So I went over to where we had eaten dinner. Yeah. And all the tables are there, and the cast supper, whoever it was, they left with the trailer. But all on the ground are, you know, pieces of bread, whatever. And there's the dog.
Yeah, of course.
So I just walk over, and I go, come here. And I pick the dog up and walk back with the dog. And again, right in front of her husband, grabs me, slams my head in her chest. And I turned around to the crew again, and I went, good thing I'm not wearing platforms. So it was great. It was great working with Freddie Asparagus. It's the only movie we got to do together. We only got to do three things together that actually ever aired. One was a cable access show. That was the last thing we did. The other thing, and Freddie Asparagus, for those who don't know, is the bartender in Three Amigos. That's everybody knows who that is. And Baby Hernandez in Havana. But we worked as a team for a long time doing stand-up, doing comedy.
Freddie's very funny.
Freddie was great. He was a very funny guy. And we did that movie. The only other thing we got to do, which was great, was Jonathan Winter's special for Showtime, Jonathan Winter on the Ledge.
I was going to ask you about that. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, and we got to be in it. We got there, and Jonathan had a thing. He was like Spencer Tracy or Barrymore. 6 o'clock, I'm done. Whether we're done with the scene or not, I got to leave. Freddie and I are there all day. And I'm not going to name the actress. When you see it, you'll realize she has not 1 ounce of improv skill in her. And she's shooting. And I'm looking at my watch, and it's 5:45. And it's 10 to 6. 7 minutes to 6. 5 minutes to 6, she finishes. Jonathan comes over to us, and he goes, because we're dressed to do the wrestling characters. I get my manager stuff on. Freddie's all set. He goes, so you guys are wrestlers, huh? You jump on each other's nuts. And I'm like, well, let me explain something, Mr. Winters. And we start doing it. The AD comes over and goes, it's 6 o'clock, Mr. Winters. And he goes, well, guys, I love to play with you, but I have to go.
I have to go. Oh, wow.
So we left. Now,
in the middle of the scene.
We weren't shooting. They were setting up.
Oh, you were hurt?
Wow.
And, no, we were just improvising with them.
Right, right.
And never got shot. And also that day, he had shot with Robin that day on the set. So that was getting to see it and then see it was. And so the director, Peter Ferrara, came over and said, listen, I'm not going to cut you guys out of the show or whatever. And I had shot a demo tape previously that I shot with me and Freddie that I produced for National Lampoon. It was a demo for them. And if I put it up on Facebook now, I'd probably the cancel culture would go nuts because he's a big hulking Mexican wrestler. And I'm the wise guy manager. And mostly I go ahead, tell him what you do. I'm going to do something, you know, and they would come after us now. And it's one of the funniest things ever. And so he said, I'm going to take your demo tape because we have Milton Berle flipping the dial during the show. He's watching the show and flipping channels. So I'm going to have him flipping the dial and you guys will be in there. I'm going to put, you guys are in the show. I said, okay, great.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And then I knew Milton Berle. He was I've been around forever. But he was such a great guy. And when I saw him about a year later, after it came out, I walked up and I said, hey, you know, we, on the Jonathan Winter show, and without missing a beat, he goes, oh yeah, you and the Mexican guy. Why didn't they use Mario? I said, well, Jonathan has to go home at 6 o'clock. He goes, yeah, I know. If it was me, I'd have stayed till 6:02. So and Milton was great.
I love that kind of humor, man. I love that.
That's great.
What was incredible? Jonathan Winters, man, he was such a genius.
Jonathan, I had a little store on Hollywood Boulevard in 1981, M&J's movie world. I sold 16mm and 8mm sound films and stuff, family stuff and movies.
Oh, cool.
And I actually had videotapes in there. So I actually was one of the first videotape stores in California. Anyway, one day this big hulking guy comes in with a cowboy hat, walks up to the counter and goes, I'd order a beer, but I don't drink film. And it's Jonathan Winters. And he would come by there like twice a week and just come in and hang out for a few minutes. And
he never breaks character.
No. And one day he said, you look thirsty, partner. I'll be back. And he came back with 2 big orange Julius.
My father sells knives and collectibles at swap meets and gun shows. And Jonathan Winters used to go to his birthday all the time, would do a show. And then, you know, the people would gather around and he would try to get a discount. My father got me Jonathan Winter's autograph. So my son's trying to be, he's a comedian. He would love your autograph. And he had to give him something for the autograph.
Wow. So cool.
Gave him a knife or something.
My uncle got me his autograph when he was doing commercials. My uncle was working at the studio there and he got the autograph. And he said, my nephew wants to be a comedian. And Jonathan, he wrote to me, you know, good luck in your career, da da da. And remember exposure. When they say do this, it's great exposure. Just tell them, well, you can die of exposure. It's on. It's written. Yeah,
that's well, so great.
This has been an hour and a half of greatness, Joey. I've got two more questions for you before I go.
I wasn't there. I don't know nothing about the whole cilantro thing.
Nicole, between 2 years ago and now, it's been 2.5 hours. We've barely scratched the surface. Joey.
I can tell.
Did you ever see Milton Berle's dick?
Oh, no. No, no, no. I wish I'd have been there when he and Hunts Hall had the contest.
If Nicole and our audience don't know, he's supposed to have one of the biggest dicks in Hollywood.
Apparently, him and Hunts Hall were tripods. Hunts Hall was the guy on the Bowery Boys that went, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually found out from our mutual friend Steve Pearl, the great comic.
Oh yeah.
That Mort Saul died this week.
Yes, Mort Saul passed away.
I used to
away.
See Mort Saul in Tarzana all the time. He used to love this barbecue joint that was down the street from my house. Did you ever meet Mort Saul? Do you have?
I met Mort Saul a couple of times. Very nice guy. It's funny because I also met Jackie Mason once.
Wow.
And he was, oh, you're a comedian. Oh, it's great to meet you. Hey, you know. And then I saw him coming out of the theater and I said, how's the play going? And he goes, what do you care? You never show up. You should show up. You're not doing nothing. And embarrassed me in front of my family.
He's so great.
I've heard Jackie Mason stories. Yeah. I heard that when Frank Sinatra was going out with Mia Farrow, they went to a Jackie Mason show and he started roasting them. And then some guy punched him in the face 2 days later on the orders of Frank.
No. That was Shecky Green.
Was that Shecky Green? Okay.
For Shecky Green. And what happened was, with the way I was told the story by the late, great Joey Villa, who was friends with Sinatra. And I also knew a couple of other, I knew Sinatra's ex-bodyguard and stuff. It's a long, we ain't got enough time. You ain't got enough days for that story. Anyway, what happened was the guys went up and started roughing. And Shecky Green was no punk. He's fighting back.
Right.
And he went in the pool. And Sinatra, that's why Shecky Green says, Sinatra saved my life. The guys were beating me up and they threw me in the pool. And Frank went, hey, get him out of there. So, and that's what happened. Get him out of there. You know, he didn't want him to drown. So apparently that's how the story went. And, you know, it was so funny because when Frank Sinatra died, any Italian actor or Italian you knew, you say, hey, do you hear Frank Sinatra died? And it was like, hey, I don't know nothing. I was at the track. You know, they got murder on their mind, you know.
Well, so, you said Shecky Green. Speaking of dead clowns, my last question is for Carl. Carl, you have 3 corpses at your club. The California Institute of Abnormal Arts.
Yep.
Why is the clown so much better preserved than the other two? And you're an expert because you're a mortician.
Well, he is hermetically sealed. It's airtight. It's been hermetically sealed since 1912.
Mm-hmm.
And I constantly have to clean the glass on top. But I mean, I recently had people, a couple of docents from a museum come over and help me clean the whole casket. And they were shocked because they could still see nose hairs and ear hairs. And I mean, most of his last request was that he would always be on display. So they sealed him in there in clown makeup in his Shriners Parade outfit from 1906 in Detroit. Yeah. But most of the makeup is absorbed. You can still see it. But they saw nose hairs and ear hairs. And like he's incredibly well preserved as opposed to the other two, which looked like death warmed over. Yeah. They're embalmed with ginseng and mercury. And the other one is pure mercury. So, you know, he's embalmed with. Mercury and arsenic. Yeah. But he's hermetically sealed, so he looks great.
Well, yeah. I'm gonna call that a show before I start talking about Joey and Carl's nose hair and ear hair. Joey, how do people get a hold of you?
You can reach me at Joey Pipes, PIPES at gmail.com. JOEYPIPES @gmail.com. Or you can reach me through Commercial Talent. That's my agent. If you want me to represent your product, and
Joey, he's great.
And you could reach me. That's my email. Anybody could email me at that, and I answer my emails. I actually sit there like an idiot and answer.
You too can book
not like an idiot, but I mean, you know, huh?
I say you too can book a comedy legend, you out in the audience.
Yeah, that'll be great. Well, I do have some shows coming up very soon that I'm excited about. And Taste on TV Network, I will be doing a show on there, and I think it's debuting right now. I'm not on tonight's episode of Off the Cuff Cooking with Craig Mitchell, but I will be on there soon. Taste on TV. So
I'm a Gordon Ramsay nut. I love all his hilarious. There's pure comedy.
It's great stuff.
And yeah, Carl, how do people get a hold of you, and how do they rent or to take a tour of the CIA?
Well, that's what we're doing a lot. We're doing private tours these days. A lot of shooting. We do a lot of shooting. And a private tour, if you want a private tour, you have to arrange it in advance. And you can call the Institute at 818-221-8065. And Facebook CI Abnormal Arts. You can go on there and get the number too. But we do private tours, and it takes like about an hour and a half to get through everything. And we give you smelling salts at the end. Yes. And clown nose is required. Yeah. So if you want to set up a private tour, you can. It's between like 2 and 8 people at a time. Yeah. Now, we've been doing a lot of them. So yeah, we end up on the remains of Elephant Man. But after going through the whole mess. Yeah.
Now, can Nicole get in with her kitty ears or no?
Oh, she can always get in, baby.
Okay. Nicole, how do people get a hold of you?
I'm at Nicole6Books on Instagram.
Yes. And I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. Guys, let's do this again in December. I got a studio in Silver Lake.
To do this in the studio.
Yeah, so we're not talking that much over each other. And Nicole, I will sit there, and you guys can be the raconteurs that you are. Everybody, happy Halloween, and have a wonderful, creepy week. Bye.
Stay safe, and God bless.
God bless you, child. Amen.